what I want you to do now, we talked about how the world comes into being. We said that the very first Sephira has made its appearance, that the white of the white sheet has become, in fact, white, and that something now can be drawn on it, and something has been. So turn the sheet over. Now look at the Tree of Life and realize that something has come into being. And it's still relatively unformed. You still can't quite tell what's going on. And what you're looking at is actually something like a fountain. It can be conceived, the Tree of Life can be looked at as a fountain of light. Because what's happened now is that the indescribable has poured forth into real existence as a kind of light. And the light has been poured into vessels. And the vessels are one on top of another, just like a tall fountain that has a number of bowls to catch the water in when it comes down from the top. And each one of the sephirot is very much like a bowl or a vessel to catch the light. And the light fills one bowl and eventually spills into the next bowl and spills into the next bowl and onwards down the tree until the light puddles at the bottom and the real world comes into existence, the one that we know. That's a very, very simple analogy, and it doesn't really hold up in the long run, but it's a good place to begin. So now you're looking at this fountain of light, and the light is pouring in as though Niagara Falls were suddenly to pour into your bedroom window. It's quite an amazing piece of activity, so overwhelming that it's very hard to consider. And in order to consider it, in order to grasp it, we need some conceptions. We need to rearrange the pillar in a variety of ways to give us the mechanism to conceive what's actually going on here. So the very first thing that we're going to do is we're going to fill in the sephirot again with the names in Hebrew. So you can, if you wish, actually take a look at your previous Tree of Life diagrams and fill them in. I'm going to give you the names in Hebrew. I want you to write them in their proper places according to their numbers. If you don't remember exactly where they go, look at your previous tree. But I'm going to say it.
Oh,
that's hard. It is indeed. So all I want you to do now is to put in the Hebrew names in the circles themselves. In the side of the sephirot, I want you to put their Hebrew names and nothing else. So the first one at the very top of the tree in the center is called Keter. K-E-T-H-E-R. It means crown, but don't write the word crown. Just remember it. Now we're going to be creating here three pillars. There's a pillar on the right, a pillar on the left, and a pillar in the middle. So I'm going to describe where the various sephirot go according to whether they're right, left, or middle, and we'll see how that all works out in a moment. So Keter is the very top sephira in the middle of the tree, on the middle pillar. Chochmah, C-H-O-C-H-M-A, goes in sephira number two, which is the top of the right-hand side. Bina, B-I-N as in Nancy, A, is the third sephira and goes on the top sephira on the left of the tree.
There is no H, it's B-I-N-A?
B-I-N, well, yeah, you could put an H, B-I-N-A-H, that's fine. That's the top sephira on the left-hand side. Now, the middle sephira on the right-hand side, going back underneath Chochmah, is called Chesed, C-H-E-S-E-D. Sephira number five, on the left-hand side of the tree, underneath Bina, is called Gevurah, G as in George, E, V as in Victor, U, R-A-H. Now we go to the middle pillar, diagonally below four and five. Remember that there is a ghostly circle in the center underneath the first three, but we're not going to be working with that right this minute. So sephira number six is diagonally below four and five in the middle of the tree, and it's called Tiferet. T-I, T as in Thomas, I, P-H-E-R-E-T-H. Then we get to sephira number seven, which is on the right-hand side. T-I-P as in Peter.
T-I-P as in Peter.
Mm-hmm. H.
Okay.
E-R-E-T-H. And then on the right-hand side, at the bottom of the right-hand side, underneath Chesed, is the sephira number seven, which is called Netzach. N as in Nancy, E, T as in Thomas, Z as in Zebra, A-C-H. Now we go back to the left-hand side. At the bottom of the left-hand side of the tree, underneath Gevura, is the Sephira number 8 called Hod, H-O-D. Now back to the middle pillar. Underneath Tiferet is Sephira number 9, and that is Yesod. Y as in year, E, S as in Sam, O-D. And then finally, at the very bottom of the tree, underneath Yesod, is Malkuth. M-A, L as in Larry, K as in King, U-T-H. Good. Those are the Sephirot, the names of the Sephirot. I'll go over them in English from the top, but don't write them in. Keter is crown. Chokhmah is wisdom. Bina is understanding. Chesed is mercy. Gevura is severity. Tiferet is beauty. Netzach is victory. Hod is splendor. Yesod is foundation. And Malkut is kingdom. Those are their standard translations. Those are the standard translations of the Hebrew. They are not the only translations, and we'll be hearing a couple of names additional to that in a little bit. What I want you to do now is I'm going to ask you to draw some vertical lines that connect the Sephirot in three pillars, and I'm going to tell you exactly how to do that. So I want you to draw, first of all, a vertical line between Chokhmah and Chesed on the right-hand side of the tree. A vertical line from the bottom of Chokhmah to the top of Chesed. Don't go into the middle of the circle. Just connect the rims. Then after that, draw a line from Chesed downwards to Netzach. All this on the right-hand side. Now that is the right pillar, the right-hand pillar. Go over to the left-hand side of the tree now. Connect Bina to Gevura. One downward line. And now connect Gevura with Hod, a second vertical downward line, and you have the left pillar. Now we go to the middle. I want you to draw a line straight from Keter to Tiferet, right through that big space. That's the longest path on the tree.
I'm sorry, say that again.
From Keter, at the very top of the middle pillar, to Tiferet, in the middle of the middle pillar. Draw a line straight down there. Then draw a line from Tiferet to Yesod. Another vertical line right down the middle of the pillar. And then finally, the last one is draw a line between Yesod and Malkut, straight down the middle at the bottom of the tree. And now you will have, as you can see, three pillars, a left, a right, and a middle. And that's the first piece of architecture, the first piece of inner structuring of the Tree of Life that you're going to see. And that has a lot of implications, and I'm going to give you a few of those right now. First, I'm going to name the pillars for you, and then I'm going to give you some of their attributes. The pillar on the right is called the Pillar of Mercy, and the pillar on the left is called the Pillar of Severity. Anybody have any idea why that would be so? Shahrazad, why would we call them that?
Okay, well, the pillar of mercy is action.
Well, but why do we call it mercy? Why is it called that?
Because it has to have the action of forgiving and understanding.
Well, you've got the general idea, but the reason for it is specifically that the middle of the right-hand pillar is called mercy. Chesed, the name that we give to Chesed, the translation of Chesed is mercy. So we call it the Pillar of Mercy because it appears right smack in the middle of that pillar.
Oh,
they say, right. And then the left-hand pillar is called the Pillar of Severity for precisely the same reason. Uh-huh, right.
I hadn't caught that before.
Okay, that's because, of course, all the names are in Hebrew and you haven't gotten used to them yet. And then the pillar in the middle is usually called the Pillar of Mildness. And there is no actual place on the pillar of mildness that says mildness. So you could say that Tiferet had the quality of mildness.
So why do you think they didn't call it beauty then?
Well, they just didn't. I don't really know why they didn't, but they didn't. I'm not really sure. But they call it mildness. Now, I'm going to give you some additional names for each of the two pillars, some additional translations. I mean, we do translate gevurah as severity. And we do translate chesed as mercy. Mildness we don't actually translate. But the translations of those two names on the left and the right actually come in handy in trying to understand the primary intention and coloring and emotional feeling of the two pillars. They're very, very important. One other name for that particular pillar in addition to chesed is gedula. I'm not going to spell it for you, but it actually means greatness, bigness. So the pillar of mercy could be called a pillar of greatness. Another aspect of both mercy and greatness in that whole side of the tree is kindness and grace and love. All of those things are descriptions of what the right-hand pillar is about. And they all adhere...
So it's victory in a deep spiritual sense.
Yeah, you would think so. But actually, victory has a very specific meaning, which we are not going to get into quite yet. Just hold on to that thought. A lot of times, the apparent meaning of things, where you think you're going to be going with this stuff, is not actually where you end up. It's a nice thought, though. Okay. On the left-hand side of the tree, severity could be called strength. Gevura actually translates as strength. That's its actual translation. It isn't really severity, it's strength. It could also be called might, as in being mighty. It could also be translated, or not translated, but it can be understood as terror and awe, A-W-E, to be in awe of something. So on the one side you have mercy and greatness and kindness and grace and love, and on the other side you have severity and strength and might and terror and awe. It gives you an idea of what the two sides are about. It was said that at the beginning, when the very first attempt at this creation was made, God tried to make the whole world stand on one pillar, the pillar of justice, the pillar of severity, and it was just too severe. It just couldn't handle it. The world collapsed from too great an emphasis on justice and severity. So the pillar of mercy was introduced in order to balance it, and the entire world that is created now is a balance of these two great forces. But there's more. The pillar on the right will often be called the right-hand pillar. And the pillar on the left will be called the left-hand pillar, and of course the middle pillar is the middle pillar. And very frequently when you're doing or listening to or reading about ceremonial magic, you will hear references made to middle pillar exercises, middle pillar magic. And there are specific activities, specific understandings, and specific action and learning that goes into each side of this thing. In each one of the three pillars, there's a whole range of considerations, and middle pillar exercises are of a particular kind. When and if you ever see references to the middle pillar, this is the middle pillar they're talking about. So there's a right, a left, and a middle. Now we get to another concept altogether. The right-hand pillar, the right pillar, is called the pillar of force. And the left pillar is called the pillar of form, and the middle pillar is a pillar of equilibrium. These are very important concepts, and out of these ideas, the entire universe is created.
Now I have the left pillar name again.
Force, form, and equilibrium. Equilibrium, for those of you who need the spelling, is E-Q-U-I, L as in Larry, I, B as in boy, R, I, U, M as in Mary. Equilibrium. When the light, when the energy of divinity pours through Keter, the pinhole in Keter, the first thing that it does is descend to the right-hand side of the tree. It descends to the Sephira of Chochmah. And in Chochmah, the indescribable becomes force. Sheer, exuberant, expansive, amazing, powerful, overwhelming, pouring forth out of force. It has no direction. It has no boundary. It has no limit. It's like an explosion of divine energy. But what is that to do? Where is that to go? What's to happen to it in a universe that has no form, no shape? Like a loose cannon, just blowing up all over the place. Remember that this is a very kind of primitive way of describing it, but I'll do my best with it. On the left-hand side of the tree, in order to balance this enormous, exuberant explosion of pure divine force, we have form. We have a vessel, something that can take, contain, control, and give shape to the huge outpouring that's coming through Chokhma. Wisdom becomes understanding by means of a container, a containment. Literally, understanding is a containment, and wisdom is an explosion of force. So the right-hand side of the tree is oftentimes called the pillar of force, and the left-hand side of the tree is called the pillar of form. The middle pillar is called, as I mentioned before, the pillar of equilibrium, where force and form gather, fuse, and join, and become usable, become mild and beneficial. The whole universe is made of one or another variety of force and form. So as a concept, it takes into account any visible, experienceable, knowable thing whatsoever, whether it be an idea or a feeling or an energy or an object. All of that, it can be understood by one or another combination of force and form. So those ideas are extremely interesting, extremely powerful, and extremely necessary. Now, we remember where the numbers are. The ace is in the middle. The number one, remember, is the ace. It will become the ace. It hasn't become the ace yet, but it will become. So Keter is the equivalent of the ace. The number two, Chokhmah, the second Sephira, actually is all the twos. And three is the threes, and four is the fours. So look and see which numbers in the pantheon of the 10 numbers of tarot belong to the field of force, and which to the field of form, and which to the middle pillar. Two, four, and seven are expansive, explosive, and energetic. Three, five, and eight are containers that give shape and contain and hold back and direct the force that comes in from the other side. And one, six, nine, and ten are modest and mild, and they take the benefits of both sides and make them usable. Be aware of that. We don't yet know quite how to apply it, but just be aware that the numbers inside the Tarot Minor Arcana are connected with these and bear all the weight of the things that we're talking about.
So even for the aces, a mild...
Yes, absolutely. When you understand what mildness means, you'll see that mildness is not necessarily what it sounds like at first blush. A lot of times, we take words that are ordinary English words and turn them to the uses of Kabbalah, and when they become Kabbalistic terminology, they become much more powerful and much more intense than you would normally think.
Okay.
So just be aware of that. Let me go a little bit further with this idea. Force can be thought of as expansive. It is an expansion. It is a growing and an expansion. And form is a contraction. So the whole right-hand side of the tree is expansive, and the whole left-hand side of the tree is contractive. And the middle of the tree is balanced.
How is splendor contractive?
Ah, in order to know that, you have to know what the Sephirot are about individually, and that's a whole subject matter unto itself, which we haven't arrived at yet. What I'm giving you now are generalities that corral the various individual Sephirot into groups, so that you can see them as groups and as groups of concepts and ideas, and then we can develop those ideas into specifics. The next thing I want you to be aware of is that each one of these pillars is connected with an element. The right-hand pillar is the pillar of fire. And you can see how that connects with the idea of force and expansion. The left-hand pillar is called the pillar of water, and is connected with the idea of being contained and being given shape. And the middle pillar, the mild pillar, is the pillar of air. We're normally used to thinking in terms of four elements. The elements of fire, water, and air are said to combine to create earth. Earth is a combination of the previous three, so it doesn't appear here. And finally, the last attribution I want to give you at this moment is the idea of male and female. The right-hand pillar is male, and the left-hand pillar is female. And the middle pillar is the pillar of divinity. In this arrangement, male and female by themselves are not enough to create anything. it's a trinity that it takes to do this. It takes three things to do this. Now remember, this is Jewish Kabbalah here that we're talking about. We haven't gotten to the Hermetic part at all. All of the things that I'm telling you here are perfectly fine inside the context of Jewish Kabbalah. So that even there, the idea that divinity is required in order for male and female to be creative, to be procreative, to make anything happen at all, even there, divinity is required and a trinity is required. The whole idea of these three pillars is that between them, every act, every thought, every feeling, and every object, and every force and form are to be found. Everything can be described in this manner, one way or another.
Between the pillars?
Yep, the three pillars describe everything. The whole entire range of creation can be described here. And remember that this whole group of three pillars and all the parts of it, all the things that we're going to describe them to be, all of it but the last one, all of them but Malkut, are invisible. Remember we said at the very beginning that Kabbalah serves the function of being a map of the invisible, and that the invisible is much greater, much larger than the visible universe, that the visible universe is only the very last step in this understanding of things. So all the things that we're talking about are made up of this group of things. Strength, might, terror, awe, severity, the left pillar, the pillar of form, contraction, the pillar of water, the pillar of the female on the one side, the pillar of mercy, of greatness, kindness, grace, and love, the right pillar, the pillar of force, of expansion, of fire, of the male, the middle pillar of mildness, of equilibrium, of balance, the pillar of air, the divine pillar. All those things combine to create the world that can be seen and the world that cannot be seen. So the concept of force and form is an amazing, totally amazing thing. It actually is more useful, perhaps, than any other single idea that I've ever come across in explaining things. It's not the end of it, but it's a huge part. And the idea of force and form as being male and female is paralleled in other systems. For example, in the I Ching, you may remember that the yang, the active, is called male, and the yin, the receptive, is called female, and that the active and the receptive are the equivalent of energy and vessel, of force and form, of male and female in Kabbalah. There are echoes of this idea, this cosmology, in many places. It, of course, takes on different names and is developed in different ways, but it is very, very similar. We don't have the time right now, but if we did, I would give you the astrological attributions that pertain to the Sephirot, and you would be extremely surprised to see which ones of the planets are considered male and which female. The female, remember that the female is on the left-hand side. It's contractive, it's severe, it's filled with terror and awe and contraction. It's actually extremely fierce. And the right-hand side, the pillar of mercy, is considered male. And it's got all of the loving, light, grace, all the things that we're used to associating, many people at least are used to associating with the feminine. So lots of things get turned around here. And eventually you'll come to see it, and you'll find it extremely interesting, that the reversal gives the feminine the kind of strength that is its due and proper right that women particularly have often wanted for themselves. And many things that go under the heading of male, things like war, are actually feminine things. They're on the contractive side of the tree. There's a lot of stuff going on here that makes life very interesting when you understand it. So I am going to leave. I'm not going to bring... Well, no. You know what? I think we could actually do it. Let's take out a third tree of life. I'm going to give you the places on the tree where the seven planets of ancient astrology can be found, where they're located. And you'll see how interesting it is. Take a fresh tree of life, a third tree of life diagram, and I'm going to give you the names of the planets, and I'm going to tell you where to put them in, and you'll see how interesting it is. So, does anybody not have a tree of life diagram handy? Okay. Keter does not have an astrological attribution. It's too early in the process. The form is too brilliant and too undefined to be given an astrological attribution. By the time they get to Chochma, to position number 2, to the top of the Pillar of Mercy, in wisdom, In that place, which we would normally call wisdom or chokhmah, I want you to write in zodiac. The whole of the zodiac, the entire seven planets and all of its possibilities can be found in chokhmah. So in the position of Sephira number 2, I want you to write in the word zodiac in the middle of the circle.
It's I thought there were 12 planets in the zodiac.
Well, no, there are not 12 planets. There are actually, these days, there are 12 signs, but we're not talking about the signs.
Okay.
We're talking about the planets only. And remember that this arrangement of things is the ancient system. It does not take into account the transpersonal planets that have been discovered in modern times. It does not involve Pluto or Neptune or Uranus. So we're only talking about seven planets here. In Bina, you can find the planet of Saturn. That's in number 3, position number 3, on the left-hand side of the tree. In the position of Chesed, number 4, you can put the planet Jupiter. In the position of number 5, Gevurah, you can put the planet Mars. In position number 6, in the middle of the middle pillar, the planetary attribution is the sun. Number 7, which is Netzach, on the right-hand side at the bottom of the right-hand pillar, is Venus.
Gee, it is reversed.
Yes, isn't that interesting? It's reversed. And on the left-hand side of the tree at the bottom of the pillar of severity is Mercury, in position number 8. In position number 9, in the middle of the tree, below the sun is the moon. So where you saw it is the moon. And then at the very, very bottom, now that's the seven planets, and of course at the very bottom in Malkuth is the Earth.
Earth?
Earth, yep, which is of course the center of the whole, you know, astrological system. So the seven planets arrange things so that many of the planets that would be considered feminine are on the right-hand side of the tree, which is masculine. And planets which are considered masculine are on the left-hand side of the tree, which is the feminine side. Remembering always that the right-hand side is expansive and the left contractive. All the things that you can associate with expansion can be found on that side, and all the things that are associated with contraction can be found on the other side.
So this is in sharp contrast, let's say, to the Pythagoras...
Absolutely.
...numerology system.
Absolutely. What you're looking at here, guys, is the beginning of the numerology of tarot, and you'll see that it's quite different than what you're used to in the standard numerological forms. This is not Pythagorean numerology. It has a totally different base.
Okay.